Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news that others refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This is the broadcast for September the 26th. In the year of our Lord, 2022, the goal is to promote God, family, and country, and to do so using the supreme law of the land, the Constitution of the United States of America, to do so using the checks and balances that our founding fathers gave us, one of the great solutions that we still have at our fingertips, and to do so rejecting revolution but standing for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. Lil Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, joining me now. Welcome back to Liberty Roundtable Live, sir.
Well, thank you for having me, Sam. It is good to be with you.
The first hour, we were with Dr. Scott Bradley, and the question was if the Republicans take control of the House, and most likely the House and possibly even the Senate, will anything change? And we came back with a clear answer of cosmetically to make you feel good, maybe, but fundamental changes, no. And we talked about how much do you understand regarding the language of politics. We talked about how much the national debt increased under Donald Trump, about $7 trillion. The debt has been going up under the Republicans and the Democrats. And this plan that they have is bogus. All right. Thomas Jefferson said single acts of tyranny might be the accidental opinion of the day, but a series of oppressions begun at a single distinguished period and pursued across all administrators, etc., you know what, will eventually lead to slavery. So I really asked the questions, ladies and gentlemen, you know, are we going to basically get rid of the, you know, CIA and the FBI and the Homeland Security? Are we going to get rid of the IRS, right? Will we abolish the Federal Reserve? If we don't do any of those things, look, we're not going to gain any ground, no matter what they say. What department do they plan to abolish? Any? And then we ended the hour by me asking this question. Are we going to abolish the Department of Education? They've been promising that for decades. Nothing's been done. Now the Education Department's in bed with the FBI to call grandma a terrorist, right? Well, Ron Paul writes an incredible column to this very topic, lol.
That's right, Sam. In his column posted last Monday, he discussed the effects of school shutdowns on the students in public schools. Quote, according to the NAEP, since the 2020 school shutdowns, the average 9-year-old has suffered a decline in reading skills and math skills. The reading skills decline is the largest since 1990. The math skills decline is the first ever reported by NAEP. End of quote. Now, of course, Sam, this tells me that most students who are enrolled in a public or government school really don't practice their scholarship much at home. Now, parents of those children must depend entirely on the public school system to educate their children, which, of course, I think is
well. And even, by the way, Lowell, and even when they know their kids aren't going to school, they don't intuitively pick up the slack either, right?
Yeah. That just so boggles my mind, because if you're not going to, well, fundamentally, Sam, parents bear the responsibility for the education of their children. Yeah, right? Mom and dad, they're the ones who should see to it that their children are learning, right? I mean, not necessarily attending school, because I think there's a big difference between attending school and getting an education. I think it's pretty rare, in fact, for those who attend school to get an education, because government schools are not designed to educate. They're designed to indoctrinate, and especially so nowadays. And so parents, you know, I think a lot of parents woke up during the shutdowns, during the lockdowns or the lockouts, because they became acquainted with what their students were getting, hearing, and learning in the classroom of the public schools, and they were horrified, and rightly so, because Paul puts it this way. He says what's so tragic about school lockdowns is that there was no medical justification for closing the school. Children are unlikely to either contract or spread COVID, so So the idea that schools had to close to prevent children from infecting their families may be the most absurd of all the absurd claims made by COVID authoritarians like Dr. Anthony, quote, I represent science, quote, Fauci, end of quote. You know, and so public school shutdowns were entirely unnecessary, Sam. The private schools that stayed open during the so-called pandemic showed just how little effect the SARS-CoV-2 had on school children.
Yeah, but we got to be careful when we say it's unnecessary. See, it depends on your goals. If your goal is to educate children and your goal is to be honest about science, then it was absolutely unnecessary. I concur. But if your goal is to dumb down the population, if your goal is to destroy any semblance of stability for children and for families, if your goal is to indoctrinate and then, hey, dumb down and then indoctrinate and dumb down and indoctrinate, they're pulling it off to a T, sir. This is perfectly exactly what they need to do to destroy the country. So when we say it's unnecessary, it depends on your goal. The Communist Manifesto, its 10th plank is compulsory education for all. So now when we turn our kids over to the government school and then we say they failed them, well, it depends on how you define failed. If your goal is reading, writing, and arithmetic, and an understanding of history and science, and learn to think and have a moral compass, then they failed. But if your goal is to have good, dumbed-down communists, they've succeeded masterfully, sir.
You're right. And I'm just grateful for all the private schools that stayed open during the time. We talked about that one in Florida where the administration told teachers that they could not come back and teach if they got vaccinated. Actually, the reverse of what most public schools were doing at the time. And they've stayed way open. They've been, they didn't have any so-called super spreader events. I mean, they just continued on life as normal in those public, in those private schools that stayed open all throughout 20 and 21, and here into 22. So I'm grateful and admiring those schools that did that. You know, I mentioned that the school closures opened the eyes of parents. Well, Ron Paul, put it this way. He talked about the, you know, concepts like critical race theory. Parents discovered how those concepts have been snuck into the school curriculum, which led to a parental uprising and a renewed focus on electing individuals to school boards who are committed to stopping government schools from indoctrinating children with political and social beliefs or undermining parents' values. Also, Ron Paul continues, quote, many parents moved their children to homeschooling in reaction to the school closures and the revelations on what was really being taught in government schools. After the school shutdowns, there was a huge increase in the number in homeschooling families. As dissatisfaction with government schools grows, more parents will begin homeschooling, end of quote. So that right there, Sam, is the silver lining of the cloud that overshadowed us in 20 and 21. And of course,
yes, it also shows though that Ron Paul isn't just a column writer with, you know, criticism of others. Ron Paul and others around him have put together their own educational curriculums that are very, very good and available to everyone. Let's be clear about this. He's not just complaining about what's wrong. He's highlighting what's wrong. He's then documenting why it's wrong. And then he's pointing to what's right and then backing it up with solutions. Lol.
In fact, he began his curriculum. It's called the Ron Paul curriculum years and years before COVID came along. He saw a dearth of real education in the public school environment. He saw that it was tending toward indoctrination. For years and years, probably decades, he saw what was happening, and so he commissioned Tom Woods to come up with curriculum for homeschooling. And Paul, Ron Paul dictated, you know, what he wanted to see there, and Tom Woods was a big part of putting that together. I listened to the Tom Woods podcast, and there was probably a year or two where Tom did nothing but just record classes for the Ron Paul homeschool or for the Ron Paul curriculum. So Ron Paul writes this. He says, quote, students using my homeschool curriculum higher education in comparison to standards set by politicians or bureaucrats. Instead of indoctrinating students with instruction in subjects including critical race theory, the Ron Paul curriculum provides students with a solid education in history, literature, mathematics, and the sciences. It also gives students the opportunity to create their own websites and their own internet-based businesses. The curriculum is designed to be self-taught, with students helping and learning from each other via online forums. Starting in the fourth grade, students are required to write at least one essay per week. Students are required to post their essays on their blog. Students also take a course in public speaking. The curriculum does emphasize the history, philosophy, and economics of liberty, but it never substitutes indoctrination for education. The goal is to produce students with superior critical thinking skills who can thrive with their individuality. End of quote. I might throw in there too, Sam, that logic is part of the Ron Paul curriculum, which is the ability to think beyond just one event to actually connect the dots. It's a wonderful curriculum, Sam.
Ladies and gentlemen, maybe I better take Ron Paul's speaking class. I need to learn how to convey information, huh? Liberty Roundtable Live with our buddy Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org on your radio.
Small Business Tech Guys is a team of experts ready to assist you with any service relating to growing your business. Our team specializes in information and technology, social media, general consulting, and HR. We thrive on assisting startup entrepreneurs with growing their businesses. If it's small business, it's our cup of tea. To schedule your free discovery call today, consider sbtechguys.com. We keep an eye on tech, so you don't have to. sbtechguys.com.
Have you ever heard of Loving Liberty Ladies? Well, the Loving Liberty Ladies are here to help you learn our American heritage and the way it affects today's society. The Loving Liberty Ladies also have a discussion guide called Proclaim Liberty. And with this guide, you can start your own group in your hometown. Get yours today on our website at lovingliberty.net. Look for our lesson supplements, too. They're free. To hear all the special offers and to join the fight for freedom and liberty, please go to lovingliberty.net.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
We're talking about the incredible Ron Paul article, School Shutdowns Leave Children Behind. Ron Paul has put together his own curriculum. It's fantastic. There's a lot of other great curriculums out there as well. Tom Woods partnering with Ron Paul for his curriculum, just so you know the kind of caliber of people putting it together. It's incredible. One final point on this education piece, Lowell?
Yes, another great thing about this curriculum is that it is perfect for parents of homeschooled children. That's you and me, Sam. In other words, parents will be getting the education they never got from government schools, but which we should have gotten from the government schools that we attended. And in other words, you're not going to be bored. You know, parents, it's not like you're going to, you know, fall asleep while you're listening to this Ron Paul curriculum. It is curriculum that is fascinating. It's interesting. It's, you know, and I've taken some of it. It is awesome. I would do it all day long if I could. It's that good. it's not written down to, you know, to a second grade level. It is very, very, it's, you know, interesting and engaging. And so one has to ask themselves, why is it so important to get this kind of an education? Well, I'll tell you why. I believe that it really enables you to be self-reliant, not only productive, but self-reliant. In other words, you're less dependent on the government, which is a good thing, because depending on the government is more expensive and less beneficial than you might think. Plus, they really have you over a barrel if you need something that they have. In other words, if you're dependent on government for your food, then all government has to do is quit giving you food, and they have you at their mercy. Just look at Europe and Russia today, for example. Russia has energy, but is refusing to sell it to Europe, you know, through Germany and other European countries, because of their differences, because of the war being waged, you know, with Russia right now. Well, here goes Europe approaching a very cold winter in the coming months with nothing but a thin layer of summer clothing. In other words, Europe is dependent on Russia for its energy. And now that Russia is refusing to sell energy to them, Europe is in a real pickle. So that is a great illustration, in my opinion, of the importance of standing independent and self-reliant and not so dependent on other institutions. Sam?
Amen to Ron Paul and his educational opportunities, folks. But there are other folks that are focused on education as well, and good on them for doing so. Jeff is with the Mises Institute. I don't know how you say his last name. Is it Beast?
Beist.
All right, Jeff mm-hmm. Beist. He created an article, Five Keys to Professional and Personal Development. This is right out of the blueprint for education, too. Lol.
He delivered his talk to the Ron Paul Scholars Seminar in Northern Virginia just earlier this month. He suggested five keys to personal and professional development. Number one, SIST. This is the first time I've heard someone actually say this out loud, but it's so true. SIST, the supply of information in the digital age definitely outpaces the demand. He said that, quote, information and opinion are readily available, but knowledge and discernment are in short supply, end of quote. Boy, is that ever true. Do you remember, Sam, when, you know, learning something was nearly impossible unless you could find a book about it in the school or in the public library? I remember when I was a kid in my home growing up, what did we have? We had a radio. We had a dictionary. I think it was a two-volume set, by the way, a dictionary. We had the 30-volume set of the Book of Knowledge, which was basically an encyclopedia, the really old books. You know, I wish I had them now, doggone it. And then a number of fiction books like the Lewis L'Amour Westerns, and then, of course, some other nonfiction books, religious books.
And then had the scriptures, which good on that.
Yeah, we had the Bible. We had the Book of Mormon. And, you know, other, you know, these nonfiction books. So, yeah, that was the extent of our ability to learn, was just books. And, boy, did I ever do a lot of reading as a kid. I mean, we didn't have TV. We did have radio. But on that radio, we listened to, like, the BYU basketball and games and the football games, you know, with Coach Lavelle Edwards in football and Coach Stan Watts in the basketball court. And Paul James was the announcer. So I remember listening to the radio very well, and also we'd listen to the Paul Harvey news at noon on the radio, and the rest of the story. It's great, great newscast. I mean, that was the extent of the information that I had available to me when I was a kid, Sam. And so, but that's not the case today. It's simply we are flooded today with information. I, you know, we call it information overload. And so the trick is to sift the chaff from the wheat. In other words, ignore the noise and heed the truth of what you find on the internet. In other words, Sam, access to information is no longer a challenge, but sifting through that information, that's the challenge. It requires us to be discerning. It requires us to discriminate and be careful how we spend our time. So that is just
Not only sifting through information, but you got to learn when you sift too, to make sure that you just block out certain information, knowing that it's not even the kind that you should sift through. So I think sifting is vital, but I also think just simply saying, look, I'm not going to turn on the CNNs of the world. They don't have any value for me. I'm going to control what books and what blogs and what, you know, news sources I receive, because I, you know what, I don't have time for the pablum or the propaganda anymore. Number two, he talks about read. The simplest thing you can do to distinguish yourself is to become a voracious reader. This is simple, but not easy. This is the core of education, too. If you can read well and assimilate, there's two parts to reading. One is to be able to sound out the words and read, but the other one is to be able to comprehend what you read. And those are two components. A lot of people can read, but they can't comprehend well. Or a lot of people can comprehend well, but they can't, you know, read very quickly. You've got to learn to read and comprehend, Lowell.
One of the books I remember reading my first semester at BYU was entitled, it was a book entitled, How to Read a Book. Yes, How to Read a Book. That was the title of the book I read, How to Read a Book. And it was a fascinating book because it showed me how to read a book, each type of book. You read a history book differently than you read a math book, for example. You read fiction differently than you read nonfiction. I mean, if you really want to learn, then, I mean, you ask yourselves questions before reading the material, right? And so if you're reading a history book and there's questions at the end of the section, you actually go to the end of the section first, you read the questions so you have them in mind, and then you read through the material and you answer those questions that are in your mind as you read that section. You know, most people, I grew up just reading the section, then I'd come to the questions, and I'd think, oh, heck, I don't remember that, and I'd go back and reread. And then the next question, go back, reread. Go, third question, go back and reread. Well, you know, and that's a really wasteful way to read, you know, a section of your history book. But if you read the questions first, then you can answer those questions as you read, and then you don't have to read it one time. Of course, the opposite of that is, well, what about the questions that you didn't ask before reading the section? Well, you have to be cognizant of that, too. So anyway, this book gave me a lot of great ideas on how to read a book and the various kinds of books. It was one of the most valuable books that I read during my freshman year at Brigham Young University. So I just throw that in. Jeff didn't talk about that in his column, but what he did talk about was that he recommends that you read one book a week. Wow. Sam, I haven't read that much in years. You know, I used to read a lot, many, many books every week. And today I have sitting here on my library a stack of books I would love to read if I just had more time to devote to reading. Instead, what I find I spend my time on, Sam, is I spend my time on campaignforliberty.org, ronpaulinstitute.org, lewrockwell.com, antiwar.com, 10thAmendmentCenter.org, or maybe that's a com, I can't remember. And, you know, basically I just have a handful of websites that I frequent.
Yeah, but let's be clear, in modern day, though, listening to podcasts and listening to audiobooks, and, you know, there's something to reading. And I'm not suggesting we should not read, but I am suggesting that you know what, information gathering and continually assessing and internalizing information is really the key here. And a lot of people are using podcasts and things like that. And I think that they are a real valuable kind of a second source to reading. I'm not saying don't read. I'm just saying a lot of that has real value in information. And if you're driving in your car, as opposed to just sitting there or listening to music, if you're listening to a podcast, it would be equivalent to reading in my mind. Reading is very important. We got to learn continuously. We'll talk about that coming up as well. Jeff highlights that reality. Lowell Nelson continues in seconds with yours truly on your radio.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
You- USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
Multiple military recruitment offices in Russia have been attacked since Russian President Vladimir Putin announced a partial mobilization of an estimated 300,000 Russian citizens for their war. Local officials said a 25-year-old gunman opened fire at a military draft office in Siberia on Monday, critically wounding the office's commander. Can NASA shift the orbit of an asteroid by smashing into it with a fast-moving spacecraft? The agency might find out Monday when DART, a bus-sized spacecraft, traveling at over 14,000 miles per hour, tries to hit a 525-foot-wide space rock. The impact is scheduled for 7:14 p.m. Eastern on Monday. 2 years after Oregon residents voted to decriminalize hard drugs and dedicate hundreds of millions of dollars to treatment, few people have requested the service. The Drug Addiction Treatment and Recovery Act in 2020 is focused on decriminalizing possession of personal use amounts of heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine, and others. A gunman on Monday morning killed 13 people and wounded 20 others in a school shooting in Russia. The school is located in Izhevsk, a city about 600 miles east of Moscow in the Udmurtia region. The United States sees that Russia is struggling in its invasion of Ukraine and has warned Moscow that there would be catastrophic consequences if it were to use a nuclear weapon in its war against Ukraine. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken on CBS News Sunday night.
We're focused on making sure that we're all acting responsibly, especially when it comes to this kind of loose rhetoric. We have been very clear with the Russians publicly and as well as privately to stop the loose talk about nuclear weapons.
Good news down at IHOP. Today is National Pancake Day. USA Radio News.
This week on the Green Stock Journal, we're looking at public companies dedicated to environmentally friendly alternative energy sources. Blue Biofuels, trading under the symbol BIOF, has developed and patented a technology that can convert ordinary plant materials such as king grass, sugarcane bagasse, and farm waste into sugars that are used to create ethanol and sustainable aviation fuels. Blue Biofuels does this in a CO2 neutral and environmentally friendly manner. With the Ukraine war leading to grain shortages and record high corn prices, Blue Biofuels offers an alternative to corn-based ethanol by using plant-based waste. There are limitations in the amount of corn available for fuel, whereas there is sufficient plant-based feedstock suitable for the BIOF process to replace half the fossil fuels used in the U.S. Technologies like Blue Biofuels could be the answer that brings about a biofuels revolution, producing billions of gallons a year, making green energy production finally a reality. Do your research now on BIOF.
For more on this story, visit GreenStockJournal.com. GreenStockJournal.com.
I'm with Lowell Nelson, CampaignForLiberty.org, and we're discussing the five keys to professional and personal development, ladies and gentlemen. An article, a talk given by Jeff Deist. He's of the Mises Institute, and three is learn continuously. Look, you can't rely on your formal education, especially if you went to the government schools, right? Lifelong learning needs to be your pursuit, ladies and gentlemen. That's kind of the takeaway he gives. He says this needs to be a lifelong endeavor, Lowell.
Right. He also says that what we need is a core liberal arts education with sufficient history, philosophy, epistemology, classics, rhetoric, languages, arts, and literature to qualify you as an educated person. Let me just interrupt his quote there, Sam, to comment that, you know, those classes that I just mentioned, you know, they aren't taught in the government schools very much. I guess languages a bit and history is a bit, but it's, you know, history they teach is more just facts. But they don't teach much philosophy. I don't think they teach any.
Yeah, they usually just do regurgitate for a test type education, not real fundamental learning to think, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so and rhetoric. I mean, when's the last time you had a class on rhetoric? It just hasn't happened for decades in a public area, the government school. So anyway, so continuing his quote, he says this, "You must learn most of this on your own throughout your lifetime. That is a daunting commitment, but a worthwhile one," end of quote. And I agree. It is worthwhile. Education is a lifelong process. You don't just go to school and graduate from high school or from college and quit learning. No, that's the beginning. That's the start of a lifetime of learning. And so I find this just absolutely fascinating. The Japanese have what they call Kaizen. I learned about this, 20 years ago, Kaizen, which means continuous improvement. I went to Japan on my mission there, so I know a little bit about Kaizen, but that really should be our endeavor as well. Continuous improvement, continuous learning over a lifetime. And one caveat, by the way, Sam, that Jeff gives with regard to reading, this voracious reading that he mentions, is that we ought to prefer books written more than 100 years ago, and to be careful with books written in the past 50 years. Why? Well, because older books, such as The Grapes of Wrath by John Steinbeck or To Kill a Mockingbird by Harper Lee, I just picked a couple out of the air. Older books, they've passed what you might call the market test. The market, read those books, and they have stood the test of time. They exist today because they are so good, and therefore they're good to read now, even though they were written more than 100 years ago. Uncle Tom's Cabin by Harriet Beecher Stowe. I mean, there's so many wonderful classics that deserve our attention today. I get so disappointed, Sam, when I go to these book fairs that modern-day students have in their government schools, and I see all these new authors with all these new books. The books like Dick and Tom and Jane Rand, See Dick Run. I mean, what moral lessons are being taught by those, sterile books? I just don't understand why, our focus is on this kind of tripe, nowadays. And one other comment that Jeff makes, he says, almost all new books, regardless of genre, have an earlier and better analog, end of quote. So that's a neat thought, right? I mean, even the new books that are written, they're written more poorly, I believe. They have less morality woven into the fabric of the story. And there's an earlier and a better analog, right? That was probably written over 100 years ago. So that I think is a great point that he makes in his speech there. Number four.
And if you look at new books, ladies and gentlemen, or read new books, my response is be very careful of the author. For example, if you read books from Cleon Skousen, you're on solid ground. You read books from Richard Mack, you're on solid ground. So you know what? There are a list of good today moral authors that draw on yesteryear and have the morality and the focus that we need. You just got to be very careful when you read more modern stuff of who it comes from and what their agenda really is. Number four is critical, Lowell.
It is avoid arguments. He says, don't waste time arguing with people, especially people on social media. He refers to Dale Carnegie, who insisted that nobody ever wins an argument. Dale Carnegie basically said, by definition, nobody ever wins an argument. In fact, writes Jeff, quote, the winner has wasted time and burned social capital, while the opposing party is either defiant or quietly hurt, despite outward bravado, end of quote. So don't waste your time arguing with people who are beyond persuasion. And then he quotes Hudibras. I'm not sure how to say that name. Hudibras, I don't know if that's the name of the poem or the author of the poem, but you'll recognize it because he says, he that complies against his will is of his own opinion still. Right? So, I've heard that said other ways, like he is who agrees against his will is of the same opinion still, or something like that. But that's true, right? If you win an argument.
By the way, that was Samuel Butler that wrote that that you're talking about. Just so you know, it's the poet Samuel Butler.
Samuel Butler. It's
published
awesome.
In 1684 for your reference.
1684, well over 100 years ago when that was written. But it is so true. I mean, how often do you quote unquote win an argument just to find that the person who you beat in the argument still holds the same opinion? Nobody ever wins an argument, right? So anyway, great point. Going on to his fifth point, Jeff Deist to promote people as well as ideas. He reminds us that the relationships that we have will determine our success more than ideas. In other words, it's who you know, not what you know. Well, you got to have both. You got to know something, and you got to know someone to be really successful. He says this, quote, "Examine the life of any successful older person, and you will discover a deep network of relationships and connections, whether business or personal," end of quote. Well, you know, reflecting on my career, Sam, I had a friend at BYU named Jeff Baker. We were in the electrical engineering program together, schoolmates, basically. And Jeff, who, you know, while working for Ken Duncan at a company called Tremco there in Orem, Utah, he suggested that I come in and interview for a part-time job with Tremco, which I did. And I was hired for the amazing wage of $4.25 an hour. To me, that was a gold mine of money, Sam. You look at four and a quarter an hour, and people today will scoff at that. But for me, having grown up on a ranch, never having earned any money, all we had was the food we ate and the clothes on our back, $4.25 every hour for just sitting there and programming, doing something that I love, was a tremendous amount of money. It was more money than I could have imagined that I could make at a part-time job, Sam. And so I have been with that same group of people my entire career. I've totally loved my association with that company. And I'm still with them, the same group of people that hired me back in 1981 or 82. I'm still with them. And I'm looking to retire from full-time work in a couple more years. So what's the impact of a connection on my life? It has everything. My entire professional life was due to a connection I had with a school buddy named Jeff Baker from California. What a great guy. And so anyway, closing this this article out, Jeff Dice says this, quote, "Make friends and be a friend along the way. Loyalty and gratitude are very important and often overlooked in our grasping society. People like to follow people, not abstractions. So do your best to be a good and serious person, one who can advance both people and ideas," end of quote. Sam?
He does a marvelous job highlighting these five fundamentals, ladies and gentlemen. And the whole goal are these five ideas are keys to your professional and personal development. But he has one more that I want to highlight beyond the five. So he really should have said six, in my opinion, Lowell. And the last one is your greatest asset is time. But it goes quickly, so use it wisely. And he's right. That's one commodity that we have control of, but it's something that, you know, hey, if you're not paying attention, it slips through your fingers like an hourglass, my friend.
And it's guaranteed to no one. Time is guaranteed to no one. You never know when your time is going to be ending, when your time is over, when you're going to, you know, die, basically. So you just never know. So whatever time you have, which is the moment now, use it wisely. Sam?
And my plea is make time for liberty. And this is Liberty Roundtable Live.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil, spiritual power to the beast, and that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads. A divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is, again, the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
All right, back with you live. Lowell Nelson, Sam Bushman, on your radio. Hard-hitting talk at your fingertips. Man, we've been talking about education big time. Time. It's one of your greatest assets, but you better use it wisely. You never know how much of it you have, and it certainly slips through your fingertips. Speaking of time, some years ago, Lowell Nelson had the opportunity to hear from a very wise man. He's now passed away, the late Larry H. Miller. And he provided some words of wisdom, Lowell.
He did. He spoke at the commencement exercises at Snow College in 2004 when our oldest daughter graduated from there. Our oldest daughter was a singer in the LD Show Choir, seemed to thoroughly enjoy her university experience there. Well, Larry H. Miller was invited to give the commencement address, which he did, but this was no ordinary commencement address. It was more like Larry H. Miller just talking candidly to a gathering of college students. And for those who did not live in Utah 20 years ago, Larry H. Miller was a successful business owner of car dealerships up and down the Wasatch Front. He also owned the Utah Jazz, which is a professional basketball team. And the Miller family remains really quite influential even today. They do have, you know, they were very successful monetarily. They still have a lot of that wealth, and they remain really quite influential. But the point of his talk, I thought, was very profound. What he told those 928 graduates, I thought, was deeply profound. He basically gave them three great tips. You know, saying basically that outdistancing your competition is really not that difficult. The first thing he says, if you can do this one thing, then you'll beat out half of your associates in business. Just show up. Yes, that is what he said, Sam. He said, just show up for work. That's the first tip, show up. And further, he said this, if you want to eliminate 3/4 of the competition, show up on time. Of course, that tells me that 3/4 of the workforce rarely shows up to work on time. Isn't that interesting? And then finally, he said this. He says, if you want to eliminate 90% of your competition, show up on time with a good attitude. End of quote. So how many of us are slaves to the work we dislike, right? Too many of us, maybe 90% of us, you know, don't like what we do. Which prevents us from having a good attitude. I just find that truly sad because, as I used to tell our girls, and I still tell students today, choose a profession that you really, really enjoy so that going to work will not seem like going to work. You know, I dug a lion's share of post holes in my day growing up on the ranch. I've moved cows. I've moved irrigation pipes. I've done the menial task. I've learned how to be a good worker, and I'm not putting that work down. I think that was great work. It's instructive work, but it's not what I enjoyed as nearly as much as what I do now, which is programming computers, you know, writing software and stuff. I mean, to me, that's a joy. To me, that's not work. And so I counsel youngsters to do what they love. If it's ranching that you love, then get into ranching. You know, and there's something beautiful and wonderful about digging a post hole And I found, I learned to find joy in that menial work as well. And so
That's necessary work, though. Let's be clear.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Most folks don't understand. They won't even eat without it. So it's necessary work. It's vital work, ladies and gentlemen.
And that keeps you, it keeps a connection between you and the heavens. This is the way I like to think about this, Sam. If you live on a ranch or a farm and you grow your own food, you grow your own hay for your cattle, you come to depend on heaven for the rain to water the crops, for the sunshine to bless, to grow those crops, and you have to depend on the heavens not to rain when you cut your hay so it'll dry out so you can bale it up and store it for the wintertime. I mean, you depend on heaven for numerous things. When you live on a ranch, when you grow up on a farm, when you grow up working with animals, I mean, these things give you a connection to heaven. And we, as a society, in large measure today, have lost our connection with heaven. Because why? Well, because we go to the store to buy eggs. We go to the store to get our milk, or to get our food, or to get our vegetables. We go to the grocery store for these things, not to heaven, right? We don't go out to our garden or to our orchard for our food anymore, mostly, 95, 99% of us anyway, in today's modern society. And therefore, we have lost this connection with heaven. And I think it's tragic, Sam. We need that connection in order to stay connected, because I mean, that's what gives life its great meaning, its great joy. The great happiness that we seek in our life comes from heaven and really no other source. Sam?
Larry H. Miller, ladies and gentlemen, speaking to college graduates, and his advice is, if you want to beat 90% of the competition, show up on time with a good attitude. Think about that, folks. Now, I've been on your radio for literally 26 years now. That's nationally syndicated. I've been on your radio a little longer than that. I've been in the radio business for 30 years now, folks. And I'm telling you right now that showing up in radio is vital. If you don't show up, there's dead air, right? You got to show up, and you got to show up on time. So you learn that in radio. But I love what I do on the radio because I get to sit back and listen. And that's why I love the name of the broadcast, Liberty Roundtable Live. It's not about Sam Bushman. You don't need to know my name at the end of the day. But the roundtable brings so many incredible, informed guests to the table. I mean, I'm hearing about Larry H. Miller's advice to graduates in 2004. I'm hearing from Lowell Nelson. I'm hearing from Dr. Scott Bradley. I'm hearing from Larry H. Miller. I'm hearing from this Jeff gentleman, right? All right. I'm learning from Ron Paul. I'm learning from all these different people. Okay. Let's see. Who was it? Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson. I'm learning from him in the Scott Bradley last hour. So I'm hearing from Dr. Scott Bradley, from, you know, Thomas Jefferson. I'm hearing from all these different incredible people, and I've been able to just sit back and listen and talk and ask questions of some of the brightest people in the world for 26 years, Lowell. It's incredible, and all I have to do is show up on time and love what I do and have a good attitude, right?
That's all I gotta do. Great attitude, Sam. Absolutely.
It's incredible.
To do a radio show with you, because you have such a great attitude. You're so upbeat. You're positive. You have solutions. You recognize problems, but you also proffer solutions. I just love Liberty Roundtable, Sam.
Now, guess who I get to hear from next?
I know.
Go ahead, sir.
This is Ben Franklin. You're going to hear from Benjamin Franklin on this. This is a thoughtful little gem that I stumbled onto just a couple of days ago. I think it is worth sharing because it addresses a really common misunderstanding that many of us have. Most of us, especially those of us who live in Utah or who grew up in Utah, we believe, you know, mistakenly, I suppose, we believe we should just go along to get along, right? And that questioning authority is, for some reason, unpatriotic or disloyal in some way. Now, I attribute that attitude to our ecclesiastical roots, right, where we are taught to follow our leadership of our church, you know, to follow our Savior Jesus Christ. And if he's the one who's leading, then I'm perfectly happy to follow him because I know he's a perfect being. He's not going to lead me astray. But that's not true of mortals, mere mortals like you and me, Sam. It is possible for us to be led astray and for us to lead others astray. So we have to be very careful about just going along to get along. And so our job is, in fact, our job is not to be loyal to a person unless that person is Jesus Christ. It's not to be loyal to an office, but it's to be loyal to the Constitution and to the ideals of liberty. So here's the quote. Ben Franklin said, quote, "It is the first responsibility of every citizen to question authority," end of quote. It is the first responsibility of every citizen to question authority. I mean, I about fell off my chair when I read that, Sam. I believe, you know, and not because I don't question authority, because I do. I've learned to question authority over the years. But to hear that Ben Franklin said that was amazing to me. We should question authority, especially when the authority is doing something that is not authorized by the Constitution. And that's how you enforce the Constitution. That's how you make public servants sensitive to the Constitution, is you challenge their authority, you question their authority when they color outside the line, when they exercise authority that's not found in the Constitution. That's when you challenge it, when you question it. And, you know, I'm not saying you need to do that belligerently, because after all, we need to be peacemakers, but I do believe it's essential that we challenge our public servants to adhere to the Constitution, this awesome blueprint for liberty. Sam?
Think about it, folks. You've heard from Ben Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, Scott Bradley, Lowell Nelson, a bunch of these authors we've been talking about. On the breaks, I get to listen to Cameron Harrison. I get to pull knowledge from him. Man, it's just an absolute education opportunity on your radio every day as we bring news the networks refuse to use to the table, as we discuss the pros and cons, as we discuss our founding fathers and their understanding and the information that they brought forward, as we learn to apply yesteryear's knowledge to today's reality, as we learn to stand for the principles that make America great, as we learn to promote God, family, and country, and protect life, liberty, and property. As we stand together, we have fun, we laugh, we cry, we pray, we do all these things together in a meaningful way to preserve the nation. Dr. Scott Bradley's incredible curriculum available at freedomsrisingsun.com. We have so much information to pull from. The sifting is critical. The always learning is critical. Learning to understand and read and always be feeding your mind good quality content. And then turning it over in your mind and internalizing it and understanding it in ways that are meaningful. Getting on your knees before God for guidance and then to stand up and go to work. What an opportunity. What a privilege we have in our modern society to make a difference, to stand as guards for the sacred cause of liberty, to promote God and testify of Jesus Christ, that he lives. And that because he lives, we can live again. And because we can live again, we can follow him and become like him. We got a long way to go when it comes to people like me, but I'm telling you that these are the opportunities that we have, that we can teach about, that we can promote, that we can highlight and focus on. Lowell, 20 seconds, final outro is yours.
Well, I love you, brother, and I mentioned Kurt Crosby because whenever I go over to his house, he's always listening to something. We talk about reading books and listening to podcasts. Kurt, he just lives. He's always listening to something educational, informative, or inspiring. So that's
Roger that. Amen.
Amen, brother. Thank you so much.
There he goes. Lowell Nelson, campaignforliberty.org, doing a phenomenal job as he always does on your radio. I'm Sam Bushman. And for Sam Bushman, Lowell Nelson, Scott Bradley, Cameron Harrison, and all of us at the Liberty Roundtable, lovingliberty.net team, we declare we the people, along with the grace of the Almighty, we can and will restore America. We declare this nation shall endure. God save the Republic of the United States of America.